Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, and as always, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, today we're joined, and we'll have him for a long time because he's on his way up to Stamford, Connecticut to call a game. We're going to have Brian Boucher from NBC on very, very shortly here, but there's a lot of news going on in the National Hockey League right now. Tons of news coming out, actually, this week. But we have the playoffs starting. They start Saturday with Boston, Washington. I'm getting excited. Are you getting excited?
I'm very excited. I can't wait. Like you said, there's a ton of news going on, but the playoffs field's almost set. We have all the teams that we need in the playoffs, all 16 teams. We're waiting on a few matchups, but one of the matchups that we do know is Toronto versus Montreal. An original six matchup hasn't happened in forever. So many compelling storylines, especially, you know, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, how good Toronto's been. But I know our guest, Brian Boucher, he grew up original six watching in New England and familiar with both these teams. And I would imagine he's very excited. So I'm going to cede the floor to Brian, and he can tell us a little bit about his thoughts on the playoffs here. Welcome, Brian.
Hey guys. Great to be with you. I'm excited about that Canadiens Leafs series. The only thing is, man, it's like last time they played 1979, right? In a playoff series, they had a close call in 93. It could have happened. It didn't. But it's just so, I guess, disappointing in a way that fans won't be able to be in the buildings for these two iconic franchises. And I know it'll still be a great series and there'll be a lot of drama, but man, I mean, for two storied franchises, wouldn't it be just terrific in two great hockey cities to have fans in the building in that series? So that'll be a little, I guess, you know, a little bit disappointing in that sense, but everywhere else, I mean, I look at this playoffs and all the series are set up except out west, and I'm doing the Wild and Blues game tonight, so there's still something to play for there, which is always good because at the end of the year, you hope that's what you have something to play for when you're doing a game on TV, and it turns out Minnesota still has a chance to gain some home ice in the west, but I think there's some intriguing matchups. I'm looking forward to the battle in Florida between the Panthers and the Lightning. I think that's going to be great. I think the Caps and Bruins are going to be a great series. I'm interested to see how Toronto does. Toronto's a team that cruised through the regular season. Can they continue that success in the playoffs? I know the hopes are high in Toronto, that's for sure.
There's so much news going on right now, and I'm almost afraid to ask this because I got two Rhode Islanders on this podcast here joining me, yourself, Brian, and Sean. David Quinn is out as the New York Rangers coach, a Rhode Islander himself, by the way. And look, we've seen a lot happening around the Rangers in the last week plus here. What do you think about the move here now to fire David Quinn and the entire coaching staff, except Benoit Allaire, who's got a job for life with the Rangers, their goalie coach? And where do you think they go from here? So I'll open the floor to you, Brian. I mean, what do you think what's going on with the Rangers right now?
Well, I mean, part of me, Dan, is surprised, and part of me is not. And I know that's an easy way out on a tough question. But here's why I am surprised. I'm surprised because, you know, 3 years ago, they announced a rebuild, right, in the New York Rangers organization. They hire a coach that is going to guide young guys into that rebuild. I think he did a pretty good job considering you know, the situation, right? I mean, we've had to go through a pandemic, which everybody had to go through. But, you know, he had some challenges this year. I mean, you think about the fact that, you know, they had to move on from a franchise goaltender in Henrik Lundqvist, who'd been there for, what, 15 years. This season starts, they have the off-ice distractions with Tony DeAngelo they have to deal with. Their star player in Artemi Panarin has to take a leave of absence because of personal reasons. Their elite number one center was atrocious to start the season, and yet they were able to get through that. In the end, they battled and they almost got into the playoffs, and I think they exceeded the expectations of a lot of people. Now, internally, maybe that wasn't the case. So that's where the part where I'm not surprised now, after having seen what transpired with Jeff Gorton and John Davidson, clearly there was an internal expectations inside that organization that although there was a rebuild, that they feel like they are at a place where maybe they are ready to make the next step. And they had to make a decision. And I say they, Chris Drury and the owner, Mr. Dolan, that this is something that they're at a point where they have to make a hard decision. And I'm sure it goes on gut feeling, where they feel like the rebuild is now at the point where it's time that they can strike in the years going forward. And is David Quinn the best decision or the best candidate to lead the team into that next phase of, you know, of their hockey club? And, you know, I'm sure this was a decision that was not an easy one to make for Chris Drury. I mean, he and David Quinn have a lot of history together. They go back, obviously, both connected to Boston University. You know, I think he was, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but Chris Drury, you know, played a significant role in getting David Quinn there to New York. But this is a decision that they probably felt internally that this team is ready to take another big step, and that maybe they feel that they need somebody with a little bit more experience to guide this hockey team. So in that regard, I'm not surprised, but still just so much going on in the New York Rangers organization that it's grabbing headlines each and every day, and certainly no shortage of drama there. And we'll see how it plays out. I mean, you wonder if this decision will pay dividends, or will it be one that doesn't? I'm not saying it's going to backfire and that this team would regress. I think this is a talented group that will do well regardless who is behind the bench. But can they make that next step? That's the big question. And a division that, you know, this year was difficult, but will it be as difficult in the next 2-3 years? I tend to think that teams like Washington and Pittsburgh, and maybe perhaps the Islanders, are going to start to, you know, they're going to be on the backside of it maybe a little bit with some aging players. Well, you know, so we'll see how it plays out for the Rangers going forward. But man, just a lot of news out of New York.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that shocks me is you look at some of these other teams that did what the Rangers are trying to do, that did a bit of a rebuild and found some success in it. You look at Carolina with Rod Brind'Amour, and you look at Colorado with Jared Bednar, and they've grown up with some of their young superstars, right? And to me, that's the position Quinn was in. They played 10 rookies this year. You know, Condre Miller took a huge step. Lafreniere eventually found his footing. He's the guy that's kind of mentored all, or was mentoring all these players towards being big time players. And, you know, there's clearly a comfort level there. And now you bring in a new coach. And you know, the other thing is every year he got better. The Rangers got better every year. They were on pace this year to have 83 points. I mean, last year it was 92. So there was a little bit of a backslide, but you know, Brian, you talked about some of the difficulties that they've had this year. And I think you have to put a little bit of that in perspective. But if you look at the team that David Quinn inherited to the team that's there now, to me, there's no question which one is better and which one is on the right track. And you know, this is such a copycat league that I find it kind of shocking that when you see some other teams have some success staying with coaches who maybe at some point you could have pulled the pin on, a Jared Bednar, who had some struggles with a very good Colorado team, and now you see it pay off and you don't stay for the long term here. To me, that's the most shocking part.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I mean, you know, Jared Bednar, I mean, we'll see if that decision pays off. I mean, I think the expectations are for them to be in the Stanley Cup final and win in Colorado. So, and he's done a great job with the group that he's had. You know, I just feel like I agree with you. I think that there is so much positive that, you know, was in New York right now with the young players. And I think that the way he handled a guy like Lafreniere this year, you know, gave him a little bit at the beginning, gave him a little bit more as the season went on. And I thought by the end, Lafreniere was playing some really good hockey. And that's the struggle that you have sometimes with some young players, right? Is that I know the fans clamor to, hey, let's play the young guys shift after shift, night after night. But the reality is that you try and make these guys in a couple ways. One, earn it so that it's based on merit, their playing time. And two, you don't want to overwhelm them so that they lose confidence. And then there's also within the team structure. I mean, there are older veteran guys that, you know, that have been around the block before, and they feel like they deserve the first shot at some big minutes or power play time or PK, and you know, what, you're just going to hand the keys over to the young guy? So you struggle with all of that balance inside of a team and how you handle that as a coach and how you develop these young players. I mean, it's a touchy subject. I think he did a great job. And part of me is saying that because, you know, I do, you know, Dan, you mentioned he's a Rhode Island guy and there's, you know, yeah. We're a small state. There's not a ton of us in the NHL. I'm a fan of David Quinn. I think he did a nice job, you know, with the New York Rangers. And do I think it's fair that he's getting fired? Not entirely. I don't think it's, I think he did a nice job considering the circumstances. And I agree with you, Sean. I think they improve. I think this team is on the rise. I think better days are to come. But with that, that's where I'm not surprised that there's a decision inside that goes on gut, you know, and the feeling inside inside the executive offices. Is this the guy to lead us to the next step? And that's why those, you know, guys like Chris Drury getting paid the big money to make those decisions. And, you know, we'll see if it pays off. But I bet you this decision was not one that was taken very lightly by Chris Drury. There's a lot. You know, a lot going on internally when you fire a guy like David Quinn because of the history that they have. And, you know, but we'll see how it plays out. I mean, I just still think he did a great – I think he did a good job. I'm going to fall short of great, but I think he did a very good job in New York.
If you had asked me 2 weeks ago, would David Quinn be coaching the Rangers next season, my answer would be yes, and I would almost be 100% on that. But when they fired John Davidson and Jeff Gorton, that changed it. That made it more 50-50 in my estimation, just because they blew it up. You know, I mean, from when they announced a rebuild on February 8th, 2018 to right now, they're on track. They are very much on track. But when they fired JD and Jeff, that changed everything, I think, for the Rangers. And it put also pressure on Chris Drury because JD and Jeff Gorton were supporters of David Quinn. And as is Chris Drury, I mean, he, like you said, Brian, I mean, he was a big part of them bringing him in 3 years ago. But when that happened, I think the pressure went on to Chris Drury to also do something about the coach situation here after exit interviews, after hearing what the players had to say, which they did have on Monday, then make the decision on it because the owner very, very clearly is done with the rebuild. You know, I think that was made very clear. And if the owner is done with the rebuild, then you've got to fast track it for next season. And if they have any question, if David Quinn is able to fast track it next season, I don't mean beyond, I just mean next season, be a playoff team, then they had to make the move, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's where, you know, you have those meetings with your players and then you have, you got to go on your gut feeling. Right. And I think that's the job of managing. And that's why you have to make some really hard decisions. But I will say, you know, when I look at the Rangers play this year, you know, maybe the success that they had is that, you know, some of it could have been skewed a little bit, you know, is it, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but was it the fact that, you know, maybe they didn't like what they saw against the Capitals, the Penguins, the Islanders, the Bruins, you know, is that something that, and maybe the success was against, you know, Buffalo, New Jersey, Philadelphia. And so maybe the idea that they were in a better spot than they were, maybe internally they felt like they weren't. And maybe that's where some of that decision comes in. But I felt like this team defended much better than they did before. I think their penalty kill was much better than before. Some players took significant strides. Guys like Buchnevich was better this year. Trouba seemed to get his game on track. And then you mentioned the young guys and the development of them. There was a lot of positives with this team. And I'm not going to sit here and beat up David Quinn because, like I said, I think he did a very good job. I just think it's one of those, like you're saying, they got to make a decision. They make the decision, and we'll see if it pays off for them.
You know, any other week, this would probably win the award. This would win the Oscar for best drama in the NHL. But this week, there's clearly competition in Buffalo. As we're talking right now on Wednesday, Kevin Adams is having his final availability. And we talk about how much there is to talk about with the New York Rangers. With Buffalo, you know, you have Jack Eichel, the captain, coming out and disagreeing with the way that the team treated his neck injury and questioning, you know, where he'll be next year. And we've heard this song from him before. This is not the first Baggy Day rendition of I Don't Know Where I'm Going to Play, but this one seemed a little more serious. And then the other thing, the other, I guess, piece of breaking news that Kevin just came out with is he said that he's talked to Granato, the coach, about his future. He's the interim coach there in Buffalo. He talked to him about his future and said he's going to interview a lot of coaches before he makes a decision, even though Donnie did such a great job for them. So, you know, when you kind of put it all together, you have all these teams now, the Buffalo, the Columbus Blue Jackets let go of John Tortorella, Arizona let go of Tockett. Like, whether there's a merry-go-round of veteran coaches or new coaches coming in, there's a lot of competition. If you have a guy in mind, you know, you're going to have to strike while the iron's hot here. So it's amazing how much everything plays off of each other in this league and forces general managers into making decisions. But when you look at Buffalo, Brian, you know, and you see what Eichel said and all the decisions that Kevin has to make, you know, what do you make of that up there?
Well, Jack's not the first player that would disagree with, the training staff or the medical staff. But there's not a lot of guys that go out publicly and say it, right? I know internally players all the time. It's a struggle because, you know, the medical team works for the hockey team, right? And they don't work for the player necessarily. So what I'm saying is they don't always have the best interest of the player in mind, particularly when it comes to, you know, do you get a player to play, you know, with a slight injury and push off surgery, et cetera. Now, I'm not saying that's the case for Jack Eichel, but I'm just saying in general, you always, you know, are trying to push the envelope. Hey, can we get this guy to play and then we'll deal with surgery later? And is that in the best interest of the player long term? You know, and that's where I think there's always some conflicts there. It's happened all the time throughout the history of hockey. You know what I mean? And some guys have a higher pain threshold than others, and other guys it bothers more than others as to, you know, how they feel they're being treated or not treated well. You know, in Jack's case, he chose to say it publicly. And I think it's because he's frustrated. And he's frustrated because, you know, I think he looks around the league and he sees guys like Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews. And I'm sure he thinks of himself in that same realm, right, as he should, because he was drafted very high around the same time as those guys and sees them having great success, right? And here he is in Buffalo, you know, looking at an abyss. I mean, where are we going here? He's probably thinking to himself. And he's frustrated. And when you're frustrated, sometimes you say things maybe that maybe later on you regret, and maybe you don't. Maybe you're saying it for a reason. He's frustrated, and I understand why he's frustrated. You know, you try and make changes to help your hockey team as a management, as an ownership group, and sometimes those changes don't work out. But for a player, you know, you've got a window of opportunity to play at an elite level in the National Hockey League and to strike, right? And you don't, as a player, you don't have 10 years to see if this organization can get it right. And that's where players get frustrated because they know that they've seen their peers do so well, and it's hard. It's hard if you're a competitive guy. I don't care about the money. Like, people think, oh, he's making $10 million. He should just, you know, whatever, to, you know, deal with it. The reality is, the reason why he got to the National Hockey League is because he has a competitive nature. All these, I do, even as a retired player, like, you want to win, and losing takes a bite out of you. And I just feel like this guy is frustrated. I think. And you're not asking the question, but I'll offer it. I think it's over for Jack Eichel in Buffalo. I think it's time to move on from him. And because here's the reason why. Because I don't think, even if you trade him to another team and you see him put up 130 points, right? Fans might get mad and be like, look at how good he turned out to be. I don't think he will ever be as good as he will be elsewhere that he could be in Buffalo. Like, I just think that mentally, emotionally, it's not going to happen. So I think now is the time to move on from it, find the best package you can for him, and make the move. And if he ends up with 140, 150 points, who cares? I don't care. Because he would never have gone 140, 150 points in Buffalo, because I just It's too hard. And the whole thing started off on the wrong foot for him. I mean, you think about it, it was like he was a consolation prize when he got there. And I'm not making excuses for Jack Eichel, but I'm just saying that I'm trying to say, hey, I understand the frustration. And I think he needs a fresh start. I think the Buffalo Sabres need a fresh start. Get the best package you can for him. Move on and try and get this franchise back on track, because that is a great hockey town. And I've played two playoff series in my career in Buffalo when I was with the Flyers. And, man, the energy in that place, when you play the Buffalo Sabres, it is a great city for hockey. They deserve much better than what they've had over the last decade plus.
Here's the issue for the Sabres, though, right? I mean, I agree with everything you just said, everything. But I think the Sabres have an issue here. Their player that they might want to trade just came out and expressed the disconnect between the organization. That might hurt his value on the open market right there, because teams are going to be like, well, they're trying to get rid of him. Now, they don't have to give him the best thing we can offer him. Maybe we'll give him the second best thing we can offer him. That's number one. Number two, he might need surgery. He's hurt. He might need surgery. He might not. How long is that rehab? What's going to happen? All of those things. There's a lot of questions there. If I'm a team looking to acquire him, I want Jack Eichel, the healthy Jack Eichel. But there's the medical assessment going on there. And then from the Sabres perspective, it's what can you get in return for him? So I agree with you. I just wonder, and I don't know that it makes a difference in the end, Brian, but I do wonder, is now the best time to try to trade Jack Eichel with all of this going on?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Him saying what he said, certainly it hurts the trade value. There's no doubt about that. And I guess the bigger picture would be the type of injury that he has. Is it a long-term concern, or is it something that can be fixed, you know, for the long term? And if my long-term worries are calm, then I feel more comfortable making the trade. But you're right. I don't know if Buffalo can get the value that maybe they would have gotten before. Now, was there discussions behind the scenes, and maybe this is him frustrated to the point where he was hoping something was going to happen and never happened, and now he blows a gasket and goes and does this? I still think, though, in the end, long-term, Jack Eichel in Buffalo is not going to be in the best – I don't know. It's not going to be in the best interest of the Sabres. I just think that he's never going to be that 140, 150 point, or whatever. Maybe I'm exaggerating on the points, but when the no movement clause kicks in, is it next season?
Yeah, next season, I believe.
Is it 2023?
Yeah, next season. So then he has the control after that.
Right. So to me, you're right, though. I think the value was hurt by him coming out and talking about that disconnect.
So before we get to the playoffs, I one quick thing, and we'll do this really quickly, but I got to pick your goaltending brain on this and your knowledge of the Flyers. Carter Hart came out yesterday and during Baggy Day, and he was pretty brutally honest about how difficult this season was for him mentally, physically, everything else that went on with it. And you know, AV in his comments said that, you know, Carter Hart has to prove that he's among the elite goalies, which is clearly what Carter Hart believes in what he said yesterday. When you look at his season, is there any concern for red flags, or do you just throw it out as COVID?
No, I think you'd be silly to ignore the warning signs, right? I would be concerned. Absolutely. I am concerned, because when you lose confidence, it's to get it back. That's a real problem for a goalie. He's a talented kid. And I still think he's going to be good this league, but I think going to be a slow process now rebuilding him back up, and I think the offseason is going to be important for him. COVID played a role in it, there's no doubt about it, because he mentioned that he started to have dinners with teammates and hang out a little bit more, and I think that's the thing about being on a team, and when you're struggling, you have guys that you can hang out with that can help you out, that can talk to you, that can make you take your mind off the game, have a good time, laugh, you know what I mean? These are things that, I don't even know. You can't even quantify it. There's no number or metric that you can say, hey, it's just part of being a team that guys weren't able to do this year. Now, it wasn't just immune to Philadelphia. Every team was dealing with this. But when you're a young player like Carter is, you know, if you're by yourself and you don't, you know, you don't have a wife or a family with you, you know, you're not bouncing things off people. You're going back to your place by yourself in your own brain, in your own mind, in your own struggles. And that's hard. And, but you know, he's going to have to put a lot of work into, you know, to erase the scars of this year and come back with a clean slate, a real training camp at a normal time. And start with a clean slate, and all eyes will be on him next year. That's for sure. There's going to be a lot of pressure, and every goal will be scrutinized. Every start will be scrutinized, and how he deals with that pressure is going to be important. You know, there's a lot of money at stake too. I think, you know, going into this season, you're probably thinking, man, this guy could sign, you know, a 6-7 year deal for $6 million plus, maybe more. I don't know. You know, now it's like, You want to bridge him, but you don't want to bridge him too low, because what does that tell you how you feel about him? You know, like there's a very sensitive issue here with a young player that you gotta manage properly. And some of it will be on the team to figure out, and a lot of it's going to be on Carter Hart to figure out, because at the end of the day, you know, it's his confidence he's dealing with, his game, his body, his mind, and how he comes out of it is going to determine the success of the Philadelphia Flyers. Because if he's what he was this year with an 8.7, what do you have, an 8.77 save percentage, the Flyers have no chance. There's no chance.
Well, goaltending in Philadelphia, the story that never ends, right? I mean, chapter after chapter after chapter, except when you played there.
Keeps on giving.
Except when you played there, it was solid, and there was no issues at all, and everything was fine. You know, anyway,
Dan, let's be real. I had an 8.76 save percentage my second year, and what happened to Carter this year happened to me my second year. It's very similar. Yeah. And I stayed that summer. I stayed in Philadelphia and I worked out all summer and hung out with Rick Tocchet the whole summer. And he took care of me. He, you know, we played golf. We, you know, we'd go down to the shore. We play in charity softball tournaments. We do dinner. Everything that Rick Tocchet did, I did. I followed him around, and that guy rebuilt my confidence and got me to getting my NHL career back on track. The next year I come back, I had a better season. I played more. I wasn't still – I mean, it was a 905 save percentage, I think, my third year. But it could have gone – instead of going straight downhill, I kind of got back on track. And that's that thing where you got to surround yourself with the right people. And that's what Carter wasn't able to do this year, because you just couldn't hang out with teammates. And that's, you know, so we'll see how it responds. But I was in a very similar situation, and a guy like Tock helped me out immensely. Otherwise, I don't know where my NHL, I could have ended after 3 years. My career could have been over. But a veteran guy like that played a huge role.
That's an awesome story, and I think that's the part we all forget about all of this, and especially with all the personnel changes that are going on right now, including Rick Tocchet being out in Arizona. But again, as we said at the start of the show, all of this is going on a parallel track while what we cover and what players play for is about to happen. The playoffs are going to start on Saturday, and you know, to me, there's so many compelling series, and the one I think that nobody thinks about that might be the most interesting to me is that Carolina-Nashville series. The Florida-Tampa Bay series is going to be good as well, but that Carolina-Nashville series, Brian, when you look at teams that can win the cup, to me, Carolina's right there. They're number two in my power rankings behind Vegas. Do you see a cup contender there?
I do, but I have some reservations as well, Sean. I mean, I think a skilled team with speed, right? Like they really do have some guys that can really scoot and play, and guys have really taken off. Like guys like, you know, Marty Nagus and Trocheck had great years, and you know, we can't say enough about, you know, Sebastian Aho and Svechnikov and these guys. But you know, the one thing that I fall back on is, like, does this team, because I watched it last year in the bubble, it feels like they got pushed around a little bit, you know what I mean? And does their game translate to playoff wins and winning a series and winning four series? That's the question mark I have for Carolina. I don't doubt that they can play fast, that they've got skill, that they've got game breakers. They've got all that. Their goaltending in different areas by different guys was very good. But when you get in a series, and Nashville seems to have found a bit of an identity, year where they're playing a little bit in your face. You know, they're playing hard. They've been playing playoff games now for a while. I think, you know, for Carolina, even though they're the favorite, like, that's going to be an interesting series right there, you know? And if they kind of stumble in that series and you see some, you know, some cracks in the armor, I think other opponents are going to feast on that if they get through that first round, you know? But I could be wrong. Maybe the skill and speed wins at the end of the day. I think Rod Brindamore has done a fantastic job there with that team. So it's such a great guy that the players respect so much. An unreal career, an unrivaled work ethic. It's legendary, the stuff that he did off the ice, and he's carried that same mentality into coaching, and they've done great. But you know, we'll see what happens when we start the playoffs, right? But that's the question I have about Carolina.
If you're Rod, who are you turning to in net? I mean, you got Nedeljkovic, who played very well. And he played the most of all the three because Mrazek was hurt a lot. You've got Mrazek, who's got some experience with you in the playoffs. You got Reimer, who I think is the clear number three on the depth chart right now. I mean, who are you starting in net in game one?
I always would say go with the young guy first because and you tell the veteran, and you know, we saw it back when the Caps won, right? They started with Grubauer, and you just tell the veteran, keep working, hang in there. It's going to be a long playoffs. Well, we're going to get to you. We're going to need you to win this thing, you know, and the veteran can handle that. The veteran understands that if you start with the veteran and for some reason they falter and now you got to go to the young guy and he's nervous and overwhelmed. Well, what do you got now? You know what I mean? Now you're spinning your tires. So I think start with the young kid. Right. And then not that he's a young kid. I mean, he's just relatively inexperienced, although he's had success with in the minors. Go with him. I mean, ride him. Like, I mean, when you're young and dumb, you just can go play mind free and play on feel, and you can ride the wave and do it and ride that wave as long as it takes you. The veteran knows the role. He understands what's going on here. He has a chance to come in and be a hero. And I think those situations work out well. So I say go with Nedeljkovic. And then eventually, if you got to turn to Mrazek, he's ready.
And we've seen, right? We've seen the Ned story before, right? That's the Cam Ward story. Like, they've played that in Carolina. Yep. So, you know, but to me, the other interesting goalie question, well, there's two of them, but the one I think that's going to generate the most headlines is Freddie Anderson's going to play tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs' first game in 17 games. Jack Campbell has been unbelievable for them as a stopgap measure. You know, Freddie was the guy all year. He's the guy that they thought would bring them into the playoffs when they got him. What do you do if you're Sheldon Keefe?
I think the same idea here, Sean. Jack Campbell's a great story. I don't know if he can ride the wave all the way to a Stanley Cup. I think they're going to need Freddie Anderson. I think Freddie Anderson's a good goalie. I think, unfortunately for him, he's been labeled with not being able to win the big game, right? But I think Freddie gives them their best chance, big picture, to win. But I think the net should be Jack Campbell's to start, understanding that the leash will not be very long, and maybe that's a lot of pressure to put on Jack Campbell. But to me, he's at best a 1B. That plays on energy, and I think the team is fed off that energy too. He's a great story, and a guy that seems extremely grateful for where he's at right now. He's had to deal with a lot of adversity, the pressures of being a high pick, and I can empathize with all of that. And I also understand the role of being that 1B or that number two guy that, you know, works hard and is there for your teammates and is a great teammate, and your teammates play hard for you. And I think that's what we've witnessed in Toronto. But I think when you're asking me about talent, when it comes down to a big picture, Freddie's the best chance to win a Stanley Cup. And if it starts with Jack Campbell, I'm on board with that. But I think eventually you're going to be looking to get Freddie in there to get you through the toughest days of the playoffs. I don't know if Montreal poses that much of a threat to the Leafs. I just feel like there's too many question marks for Montreal to upset Toronto. What Montreal did last year to Pittsburgh in the bubble, I don't think it's going to happen this year.
Do you look at Toronto, Ryan, as a legitimate Stanley Cup contender then? Do you think that they can do it? this year?
Man, I it's so hard to handicap, Dan, that North Division. I mean, it's just, I don't know what that North Division is, you know? Like, I want to believe that they are a legit team. I think, like, the addition of TJ Brody was a great move by Kyle Dubas on the back end. It really seemed to settle things down for them back there. He defends well. He makes a simple play. He's predictable. I think it's helped Morgan Riley out a ton. And then, you know, the additions of, you know, guys like Joe Thornton inside that locker room and Wayne Simmons. Personally, I played with him. I know the infectious personality that he is. I think he helps that room immensely. And then you've got two stars in Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. Like, these guys are stars. And so, yeah, I guess you got to take them seriously. It's just, you know, when I look at, you know, the other teams in the other divisions, East is just stacked. I mean, it's just going to be so unfortunate that three teams in that division are going to be going home by the second round. It's craziness. You know what I mean? And then, you know, we mentioned Carolina, and you got the Tampa Bay Lightning, the defending champs, and Florida. You got to consider them a contender. Absolutely. I'd be disrespecting what they've accomplished this year and the additions that Dubas made to say that that North Division is so weak that we should not take them seriously. They have to be a contender.
You just mentioned the Tampa Bay Lightning. Is there any reason for concern at this point? Look, it's late in the year. They tried to rest Vasilevskiy a little bit. He's played a ton for them because of their goalie situation. They've had some different lineups, but they haven't looked like a Stanley Cup team for the last month or so. Victor Hedman's been struggling. There's been some whispers about potentially having an injury that needs to be dealt with in the offseason. But then on the other hand, they're getting Kucherov and Stamkos back. Where's your championship meter on the Tampa Bay Lightning?
I respect them because they won last year, and you have to respect that, but it's very hard to repeat in this league. You know, we've seen that. I am concerned, though, Sean, because, you know, Kucherov and Stamkos injuries, although they are coming back, and although that's great news, you know, especially Kucherov, he's going to try to catch a moving train here. And their first-round opponent in Florida, you know, they're a good team, you know what I mean? And they've had a fantastic season, and Joel Quenneville's got that team playing well. So this is not like a layup first round matchup for them. So, you know, there's going to be some rust timing wise. I think in Kucherov, even as great a player as he is. So that's a concern for me. Stamkos, you've got to always be concerned about, you know, his health. You know, we saw last year was a hard year for him, and now the injury this year. Hedman's a big one, though. Like, it sounds like he's going to require off-season surgery, so he's clearly got something going on. And will he be the Victor Hedman that you know, that we're accustomed to seeing? No, there's concern there. Barkley Goodrow, I believe, is injured as well. That was a big piece for them last year. That third line played a huge role. This is not the same team that was humming in the bubble last year. So there's going to be a little bit of time to see if they can get back on track. But that's going to be a tough series against Florida. And yeah, we'll see how they respond.
I agree with you. I mean, the last time we saw Victor Hedman hurt in the playoffs, the Tampa Bay Lightning got swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets. So he's that vitally important. He is their most important skater. There's no question. The one thing they have, though, is they don't have any questions in net. And we've been talking about some goaltending issues with some of these other teams. I want to ask you about Florida. So they got Sergei Bobrovsky. They're paying him millions. He's their number one guy. How short of a leash, though, is there now from Joel Quenneville to Bobrovsky when you know that Chris Driedger or Spencer Knight, but I mean, let's just look at Driedger and what he was able to accomplish this year with that team, and specifically against the Lightning. I mean, he was very good in his three starts against the Lightning as well. So are we looking at a short leash here for a veteran goalie who is supposed to be your 1A and no questions asked?
I think so, Dan, because, I mean, they have a real opportunity here, Florida does. And you can't be overly loyal to a guy that you know, that was signed to a long-term deal because, you know, you're going on sentimental value here. Chris Driedger played fantastic for this team this year. And I think they have all the confidence in the world in him. that he can do the job. I don't see Spencer Knight playing a role in any of this unless there's injuries. That's too tall a task, although he's done a great job in starting his NHL career. Too tall a task to ask a kid like that to step in and do the job. But for Driedger, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't hesitate at all. And you know, with Bobrovsky, real athletic, really talented, right? Works hard, everything that you love in a guy. He's a great guy. But when his game gets going sideways, it's leaky. It looks nervous. It looks scrambly. It's not settling the nerves, you know? And it's easy to see. I played with Sergei early on in his career. And when I was backing him up, I could see the nights where I was like, oh man, I got to get ready here. I can see it, you know? And there's still some of that in his game. And I'm sure Joel is going to see that as well. And if he sees any of that, I don't think he's going to have any hesitation. I think Belize will be fairly short. Because like I said, maybe you have a chance to bounce the defending Stanley Cup champions out of the tournament. You do it. Like, you don't mess around. And sometimes you got to make decisions that are hard decisions, but I think the Leafs should be short. If you don't like what you're seeing, I think you got a real good option in Driedger that can win you a series.
The Leafs may be non-existent with Q. I mean, let's not forget, he started Scott Darling a couple of years ago over a cup-winning goalie and Corey Crawford. Like, he has no fear when it comes to goalies. A lot of coaches, I think, are somewhat fearful of dealing with their goalies just because it's a position onto itself and it's the only one that has its own coach and everything else. But Q, I guess he's got a track record where he just doesn't care. He'll start whatever his gut says.
Yeah, and I think he's, you know, look, he's earned that, right? He's a Hall of Fame coach, one of the best coaches we've seen in hockey history. So, I mean, when it comes to handling personalities and worrying about hurting people's feelings, I don't think Joel worries about that. I think his focus is on one thing and one thing only, and that's putting the best lineup out there to win, and that's it. And so for that, he's the right guy for the job in this situation.
You know, Brian, we talked about some concerns there with the Tampa Bay Lightning with injuries. I have similar concerns with the Washington Capitals. Alex Ovechkin missed 7 of 8 games, played one shift in the one game he played from a lower body injury, did play in their season finale. TJ Oshie missed the last game. Obviously, Kuznetsov still on the COVID protocol list. Samsonov, we've been told by Peter Laviolette, is in protocol as well. Carlson missed a couple of games. They're an older team. And I think this is a real tough matchup with the Boston Bruins. It's a heavyweight matchup. I have concerns with the Capitals and their ability to get out of the first round here. They haven't been able to do it since they won the Cup. Do you have similar concerns there with Washington? And do you believe that they're in deep here against the Boston Bruins?
Yep, 100%. You nailed all of it, Dan. Edzo asked me on Saturday, you know, who do I think the Bruins want to, who is their best matchup in the first round? I feel like it was the Washington Capitals for all the things that you just mentioned. They are banged up. There's question marks. They got a young goalie in Vitek Vanacek. And the Bruins are a team that is, they made the deadline move to get Taylor Hall, Mike Riley, Curtis Lazar, and this team has really taken off since then. And this is no longer a one-line team, right? I think for a long time this season we saw Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak. That's it. This is not the case anymore. They are more than that. And their back end's getting healthy. Their goaltending, I think, is better in Boston. And, this is going to be a tough matchup for the Washington Capitals, no doubt about it. How healthy is Ovechkin? Will Kuznetsov play? I mean, it's just too much. I mean, I know it's going to be a hard physical series, but if it ends up being one where discipline becomes an issue, I think that the Bruins will win the special teams battle. I just really do. I think that, that's something that will play in it, and you wonder how the young goalie will handle it. I mean, will they end up going to Craig Anderson in this series? I mean, who knows? I mean, there's too many question marks for me for Washington right now. I feel like Boston's in a good spot. They rested their guys last night, all of their big players. I think this is going to be a tough series. I'm not saying that Washington cannot win this series. That's not what I'm saying. I just think it's going to be a real dogfight to get by Boston, considering all of the question marks that are there.
Ryan, this is the last one for me, and this tells you how hefty our plate was today at the hockey buffet. We have not gotten to Connor McDavid yet. And we haven't done a show since before he reached 100 points. We did a ton on him before he got to 100 points. He gets to 100 points in 52 games, whatever it is, and he just keeps going, showing no signs of stopping. They get a Winnipeg team that is just reeling like very few teams I've ever seen reel going into the playoffs. Thank God they had a bit of a cushion there with the rest of the North that hasn't been very good. I'm curious, when you look at Connor McDavid and you see the way he's playing for the Edmonton Oilers, is it enough, do you think? Because you talk about one-line teams, and you could say that Edmonton's a one-line team, but they're such a dominant one-line team. Can Connor McDavid, with a little help from Mike Smith, get the Edmonton Oilers to the Stanley Cup final?
I think that's a tall ask. I don't see them as getting to the Stanley Cup final, Sean. I think Connor's a great player, and he is hands down the MVP. But you know, we've seen in this league, the depth is such an important thing to get to the end here. You know, and I just wonder if they even have that in Edmonton. You know, like, I think in a playoff series, he's your target, and I know he's going to get his points. I mean, but if you can really frustrate him, or even get a piece of him and take a chunk out of him, and maybe he's not 100%, you know, that team is not the same. And Mike Smith is, you know, he's not a young guy anymore. But, you know, what happens if he's not 100%? You know, Edmonton's a great story. McDavid's a great story. Drysdale's a great story. But I just don't know that they are a cup contender right now. I would think they get by Winnipeg in that first round, but it's not a given. I mean, you know, that'll be a hard series. I think Winnipeg will give them a good fight, but I don't see them as a Stanley Cup contender. I just don't. I mean, I could be totally wrong, and it's not that I do watch Oilers games, maybe not as intently as I do, you know, the teams in the East and the teams that I cover. We haven't really covered a lot of Oilers games just because of the way the pandemic shook out. But I just don't see the depth that's needed to go all the way.
All right. So there are some cup contenders in the West, and this is the last one for me before we let you enjoy the beautiful landscape of I-95 on your way to Stamford.
You can wave when you go by my house.
Yeah, the Colorado Avalanche and the Vegas Golden Knights. I think, you know, pick them however you want. I think they're the best two teams in the league right now. But are either one of them ripe for an upset? Because Minnesota's been very good for a very long time. They're for real. And the St. Louis Blues still have a championship core, missing some pieces from that championship team. We don't know how the matchups set out yet in the West, but are either one of those two teams ripe for an upset, do you think? Or will we see Colorado, Vegas in the second round?
It's funny. Minnesota has had great success against Vegas, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to ignore that. Minnesota is a team that they're playing. They're a team right now. Like, it used to be the Ryan Suter, Zach Parise show there, and it's not anymore. There's a buy-in in Minnesota that has not been there in a long time. And that's a scary opponent to me. And there's pressure when you play a team like that. Well, you know, does it end up being Vegas and Minnesota in the first round? Like you said, we don't know, right? I think I'm more inclined to say that I think there will not be an upset, but it's hard to ignore the success that Minnesota had against Vegas. I just think we're destined to see Vegas and Colorado in that second round matchup that we've been clamoring for. But you know, we'll see. I mean, St. Louis, you know, they've had a fantastic turnaround. I think their power play has been a big reason why they've turned things around. They've been clicking. O'Reilly's been great for them. They've been there before. They're going to play a hard series. You know, Berube's going to have those guys fired up to play. But there's a lot of talent on Vegas and Colorado that I just think they're going to find a way to have that clash. And I think all the fans want to see it. But that's why you play the games, right? I mean, there's always that pressure in the playoffs. It doesn't matter how good a regular season you had. When you wipe the slate clean and, you know you have that target on your back, it's hard. Like, it's not it's not as easy as people think. And these teams are a lot closer when you start at zero and you start adding the intangibles of a series and what it takes to win. These teams are a lot closer than people think. And it can come down to, you know, discipline in one game. I mean, sometimes you see, you know, things change the temperature of a series. I mean, you make a mistake in one game or you lose your discipline and now you've lost momentum and that's enough to change the tide. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but I think we're going to see that clash between Vegas and Colorado. And then, you know, again, unfortunately we're going to lose a real good team at that point that won't move on to the third round. But that's just the way it is in this year's NHL.
Ryan, I lied. I'm going to ask you one more question before we let you go. And
what do you got? I'm going past Newark Airport right now, by the way.
Oh, you got time. Yeah, well, yeah, we could keep you on for another 2 hours, but I don't think our producer, Bob Bender, would like that. But, no, my last question for you is, you're Pete DeBoer. You know a little bit about goaltending. What the heck do you do with those two guys in Vegas? I mean, they're both ones, and you've already had an issue last year where you picked one over the other, and it almost derailed everything. And any coach in the league, I think, would be like, oh, I'd love to have those two guys on my team until you get to the playoffs.
Yeah, you can't go wrong on this one. There's other situations where I've laid it out for you on who to play. In this one, you cannot go wrong. The only issue you're going to have is you might hear it on Twitter from an agent, from one of the guy's agents, if you make the wrong decision. But I don't think Pete DeBoer is going to worry about that too much. Both these guys are fantastic goalies, and man, you could just rotate them if you wanted to. That's literally the luxury that Pete DeBoer in goal. So I don't see any issue there. Like, I don't know how he's going to play it out, Sean, but to me, I think you just can't go wrong. That one's not like, it's not bothersome to me, that one. You know, there's other situations that could be bothersome, you know, and you got to make sure you make the right call. Like I mentioned, I always think it's best to go with maybe the underdog guy, the younger guy to start, because if he falters, you know, the veteran is going to be ready to play. And I think in this case, they're both veterans. Do they want to play? Sure. Both guys want to play. There's no doubt about it. But if they're not playing, they're going to be ready. And they know, I think they're both professional enough to know that their team is a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. There's no reason to bellyache. You know, the situation is what it is. You're not going to play, you know, in a normal, you know, it's not a Vasilevskiy situation, right? Because of the two guys that they have. So they know this going in. They'll be ready. They'll be pros. And whoever DeBoer, you know, he can close his eyes and throw a dart at the board. Whoever it lands on starts that night, he'd be perfectly fine. That's how good both these guys are.
We've never seen it before. Really quickly, would a rotation work in the playoffs?
Well, then Philadelphia did it with Garth Snow and Ron Hextall back in 97, right? They did it through the first three rounds, and then I think they settled in on Hextall in the final. I could be wrong on that because I was playing junior back then, and I'm just going off of my memory, and they got swept by Detroit. And I'm not saying it was all Hextall's fault. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, they did do a rotation up to that point. I think it can be done, especially if the guys know it. Going in, it's not like you're surprising your team. It's not like you're surprising the goalies. This is like what we've done, and you just continue to do it.
They've alternated for almost the entire second half, so that is what they've done. Brian, look, we appreciate it. You gave us almost an hour of your time as you're in the car there, so couldn't ask for any more. Appreciate it. Enjoy the beautiful scenery of Newark as you pass by it. It's wonderful. You're almost in Stanford. Have a great call tonight, too. All right.
You're in the Garden State. Don't forget that.
That's right. The Garden State. Have a great call tonight. Thanks a lot, Brian.
All right, guys. Great to be with you. Take it easy.
That was a good time, Sean, to get Brian on for that long. Obviously, he had the time sitting in the car on his way up to Stanford, but he's a terrific hockey mind. Goalies usually are, right? I mean, they usually are. He's a good hockey mind, and he's with NBC now, and, you know, he's going to be on TV for a long time. There's no question about it. A lot of good insight, and especially on the goaltending, I thought was a lot of good insight there for the young goalie. Interesting perspectives there from Brian Boucher.
You know, my favorite part about Brian, and I think you might find this from a lot of us Rhode Islanders, is he's never shy with his opinions. He's got some opinions, and yeah, he shares them, and he stands by them. You know, a lot of a lot of people try and walk both sides of the fence. You don't find that too much with Brian, and I really appreciate that. So it was great having him on, and it just underscores all the excitement and all the storylines. Like, we finished almost an hour with Brian, and I have about 82 other storylines I still want to talk about, but we got to get out of here soon. The tape's going to run out, I've been told. So we got to get out of here soon. But like I said, so many things to still talk about. And we're going to be here, fortunately for the listeners, we're going to be here every week throughout the playoffs. Days may change a little bit, but sometime in midweek. And we'll be talking about all the storylines that are going on, the upsets, the great performances, and everything else that makes these next 2 months unbelievably compelling.
The tape's going to run out as we record this in 1984. anyway, yes, no, it's exciting. The playoffs are just around, just here. I mean, they're here basically. Saturday night, we know they start with Boston, Washington. We'll, the rest of the schedule will be coming out shortly. We'll learn it. We'll embrace it. And Sean, we'll all be watching. Like you said, we'll be here. So everybody out there, stay safe and enjoy it. And thanks for listening.